Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together.
Hi, Fabian. Thank you very much for joining to the Humans in AI podcast hosted by AI Frontier Network by me, Flor. So I appreciate the invitation and I appreciate that you're making the time to be here. I hope that we have a good time at the same time that I'm sure that we will get a very good insights from this interview. But yeah, let's start then. For what I understood and I've been researching about you, it's like your passion is building and scaling software companies. So you work in Celonis, which is actually a pretty big company. And you started, I found it very interesting something, like you started as a data scientist and engineer, and then you scale up yourself, not even the company, but yourself first to be executed. So how was that journey? How was that process?
Yes, it was an incredibly exciting journey, and I'm really happy that I made it all the way from Celonis to Make over the years. And basically, when I joined Celonis, it was a small startup. It had 20 people, and everybody was doing a little bit of everything. And so as we built out the company, as we scaled, things became more structured. I started to focus on operations, and I started to help build and scale the company and like shape how we structure and how we organize. And over time, had to build out several teams, scale it up, and really, build from there. And this is, I think, how I got into it. And then, a couple of years later, suddenly you are from 20 to several thousand employees. And of course, that's the type of growth where you're super happy to be on the journey. And there's so much to learn every day, every year. And that, I think, is what, created this passion for building a business, scaling it, helping to figure out like all the scaling issues on the way. And it's my passion today, I would say.
So how do you end up in Make then? Actually, now you started as a COO, but now you are CEO. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive journey. So how do you end up doing this now?
Yeah, so I've been like from the first day working very closely with the founders at Celonis back then, and always been building operations over there, almost like in a COO role. And then later we found this exciting company out of Prague, which was called Integromat back then. And when we met with the founders of Integromat, we realized, hey, it's a really cool product and business that they have built. And while it was still small, it was super exciting. And when we convinced them to join Celonis as a company, it was my chance to join them and their management team over there and go back to something smaller and build again and help shape it. And over the years, I transitioned from the COO role into the CEO role. And of course, now with a much broader focus all the way from customers to product, but mostly really excited about what we're doing and like building a very visual way and approach to how you automate and how you bring AI into the automations and into your workflows. And really happy that I ended up there.
So with all that background with Celonis and Make is still your present, but and at the same time that you study at top university in Europe. So how did that shape the way you think about technology and business?
Yeah, so I have this background in mathematics, which I think in day-to-day, I don't have to use as much. I think often what happens when you study at university, you're learning concepts and maybe tools that you can potentially apply. And I think in mathematics, it's in a very abstract way. So you're really learning how to deeply assess a problem or a challenge and trying to solve it from the fundamentals, from the ground up, basically. I think many people call it this first principles approach, and I think it works really well in business too. And I think that often helps me in day to day.
So it's how you keep grounded, right?
Absolutely. I think whenever you don't know like what the solution is, keep asking questions. I think you need this curiosity, but you also just need to establish this baseline of, okay, what do we really mean by what we're saying? And what is the real challenge behind the problem we're describing? And then just digging in until you really understand and then try to solution from there with the team.
Yeah. So now with AI is not just a boom, it's a reality. So you as a person, as a leader of a company that with no code, like you work with automation. In your perspective, was there a deeper shift happening in how business innovate with AI?
So I think what happens now is that we have this shift from companies being just excited about AI to really finding ways how to put it to work for them in their business. And we see this a lot across our customer base at Make as well, where we have more and more companies and people coming to us with this wish to find ways how to bring AI into the business, how to put AI to work for them, basically. And often it doesn't have to be super complex. So while many dream of let's have agents everywhere in our business, reality often today is like you need some form of a generative AI, an LLM or something that helps you in certain process steps and helps you to really automate business processes and workflows that have been tedious, that have been highly manual. But it's not so hard. You basically need to integrate across business systems and processes and bring AI into the mix. And I think more and more people start to realize that. And this is for me the very first wave of really putting AI to work in a business context where you go beyond just using it to chat with AI and like generating some new ideas, maybe like creating a new text or content piece, but really bringing it into the day-to-day operations of the business processes. And yeah, scaling the use of AI basically to something that is much broader than just chatting with an interface.
Yeah, sure. What do you think what's going to be the future for not just for developers, but for other like common people who don't have technical skills to build with AI? So do you think it's going to everybody will be able to do it, or do you still think that there's a lot of work to do to get to that point?
Yeah, so for us, this is deeply grounded in our vision, basically. So it was always very important for us to bring a product to the market that is very visual in its approach, which means instead of having to write code, you have a very visual interface that allows you to manipulate your workflows and building solutions in a very easy, intuitive fashion, reducing complexity, making it visual, make it feel like you can drag and drop together solutions. And in this way, it hopefully is very empowering. And we always say we want to empower innovators. And that doesn't necessarily mean they need to have a technical background. I think, of course, you need to have a certain understanding of the business processes or the operations that you want to, where you want to bring new digital solutions into it, whether it's with AI, whether it's with automation. But ultimately, for us, this approach is really about being visual and how you empower people. And then I think it's maybe easier if you have a developer or a coder background because you're more familiar with these abstract concepts and that helps you, but it's not necessary anymore. And I have a lot of these examples nowadays where we have people in our customer base that are reaching out to us saying, "Hey, it's really exciting. I just went to your academy. I started from scratch. I don't have any tech background. Many studied also social sciences, and they just want to launch their business or help to bring the business to the next level, scaling it up. And now they need automation, they need AI in order to make it work, in order to for it to scale. And yeah, we can help them without them having to have a coding or engineering background, basically.
That's great. So, as well as AI is a big opportunity for automation, there's a lot of opportunity as well for new companies or companies that are already there doing similar things that Make, for example, Zapier. What is your thoughts about the future with the competition, for example?
So for me, I think overall, there is something where we are really widening up to a broader market right now. I think in the past, automation, like technologies like Make or Zapier have been offering, were more for the people who really wanted to get into the nitty-gritty. And now with AI, more and more people realize it's a foundational requirement for you to put AI to work for you. So I think what happens is we went from really the most avant-garde people, the ones who really were the front runners, the ones who were really innovating in their business, to a broader audience that got really excited about AI, and they need to find ways how to bring it into how they operate and into their business processes, into their software, into their customer interactions, into how they manage tickets, how they solve any of the operational processes, financial processes, even things like recruiting or hiring. Yeah, now basically it becomes something that is much more mainstream. So I think the market is growing really fast. There's plenty of space for many companies to offer something in the space. Some are very horizontal. You can basically integrate anything and everything, like you can do with Zapier or Make, as you mentioned. But of course, there's also some very niche solutions now that really go deep into a very specific use case. And I think the market is just growing so fast, and there's so many ways how to deploy AI, to how to deploy potentially AI agents, how to bring agentic workflows into your business, that I think for a long time, over the next, at least half a decade or so, there's probably plenty of space for all of these solutions to grow and really find their market and their ideal customer base.
We've been talking a little bit about your perspective of the future of Make and how it's going to be with it, with the competitors. You said that you like driving growth, right? Building a strong culture in your team. So you lead now by more than 300 people in a global team. So how do you deal? You're a CEO, you need to have some skills for that, but Mark, what have you learned about building alignment across different cultures? Because every culture is very different. Like the Asian culture is not the same as the European culture. The European culture is not the same as the, for example, American culture. It's an example. So how do you make that everything work in harmony?
Yeah, so I think I want to give maybe two different analogies. So the first one is when a startup starts to scale and when it really starts to grow, that's a super exciting phase. And I think in the early days, a lot of the cultural values, how you operate, how you interact with each other, what's important to you as a company and as a team, is very implicit. It's in the day-to-day, how you interact, how you build for your customers, how you show up. As you grow, you need to make this more explicit because suddenly you're not 30 people, you start to be 100, 200, 300. And it's impossible for leadership to know everybody individually. And also for everybody who comes on board, it's harder to understand what are these unspoken rules. Earlier, you make this explicit, you really help people that are joining to understand, okay, what is really important to us? What are the cultural values we are focusing on? How do we operate? And I think it's fundamental in how you onboard people and how you also talk about it, how you measure performance and all of that. It really helps you in like building a certain culture that you want to strive for. And then furthermore, as you grow, you also want to keep this startup spirit alive as much as you can. And so that's maybe the second thing we think a lot about, not just for ourselves, but also for our customers. Because ultimately, as I said earlier, we want to bring a very visual way how you can build automations and bring AI into your business. But we call it often like empowering the innovators in your business. So the people who push the boundaries, who bring new ideas. But for this innovation to happen, we think of different dimensions. So on the one hand, there's this will, this inner motivation of people of how to create new solutions and bringing the business forward. But there's also the skill. So you need to make sure that as much as you're encouraging the will and like really inspiring them with ideas of what's possible, you also need to make sure, okay, they have the right technology at their fingertips, they get the right enablement, they can train up on new technology. I think now more than ever, it's important to also bring a lot of enablement and coaching and other sessions into the teams so they have the chance to also learn new AI technologies and products. And last but not least, there's this third dimension beyond this will and the skill, which we call the environment. So basically, what you're setting up in terms of structures as a company and making sure people are actually allowed to challenge the status quo, push the boundaries, and they are encouraged to do so. And they also get the right tools at their fingertips available and like an organization that really encourages this culture. And I think then you can continue to drive for better outcomes, keep innovating and really operating fast, even if you're scaling.
Okay, how does your team embrace AI in the workplace? Because as we said before, we talk about AI agents that many are saying, oh, AI is going to replace your job or whatever. So how much your team trusts AI, basically, and how do they kind of embrace in the work that they do? You know, because you're already doing automation, but you're having a team that helps you to build a software.
Yeah, so I think there's many different dimensions. So we see this both with our customers who use AI as part of the automations they are building. So you can bring AI into your business workflows as one of our customers. And we've seen this growing tremendously, around 5x over the last year in our customer base. So this is really significant. And then there's the internal perspective. So of course, we want to make sure our own teams are also leveraging AI where they can. So we've set up a program as we started into this year where on the one hand we identified people who are really like the front runners in the organizations, the ones that really want to drive change, bring AI into the business and find new use cases and where to apply AI to make us more effective and help us scale. So we really, put a lot of focus and effort for them to be empowered and having the tools and everything. And then the other piece is really like setting up also programs for people to really learn these technologies, whether it's just some AI tooling, whether it's how to bring it into automation flows, how to build out agents. Very recently, we've done an agent hackathon. Nowadays, you can build your own AI agents in Make, our own product, and we've done a hackathon there where like everybody was encouraged to build out their own agents for the first time. And you just need to create an opportunity, I think, for everybody to learn. Really setting up as organizationally in a way that people can embrace AI, and then of course really double down on those who are the front runners and who really create some new, really exciting stories and use cases that then you can share again among the team and hopefully inspires more and more people over time, because I think it becomes a necessity now. We all have to think about acquiring new skills around how do we leverage AI in our day-to-day, how can we potentially 5x ourselves. And I think it just changes a little bit. Knowledge work becomes harder, it becomes more challenging, and the expectations rise on each and every one of us. So I think the future is learning these technologies and really embracing the change and driving progress, basically.
So talking about learning, when you were working in Celonis, you have an impressive career from engineering to executive vice president. So how what do you what did you get any lessons from? Obviously you did, but so what are the lessons that you got from it and then that you are even using now in Make, for example?
So I think a lot of the lessons that I've learned have been very hands-on and very entrepreneurial. But of course, a lot of it for me is about building the right structures, building the right organization, and finding the right people who join the mission, who are on board to pursue the same goals, to pursue the same vision and mission of the company, and then really like rally behind that purpose. I think ultimately, like it's about building a strong team, bringing together people who share the ambitions and share the vision that you want to achieve as a company. And I think that's really what can make the difference. And at the same time, I think a lot of pragmatism. Like often in the business world, it's also about making the trade-offs and really focusing on what's most important in this very moment. And then as you like see customers using your technology, looking for more, demanding more from you, really like understanding, okay, what is really driving the biggest impact for your customers and really focusing on that. And that helps you scale usually.
That's beautiful, actually, because I think there's always a learning lesson, right, in everything that you do. Mostly, that's why you are the CEO today, right? So it's not. I don't think that's been a easy journey. So to have this role and lead a company. Talking a little bit about you are a European leader, a European CEO, right? So let's talk a little bit about Europe, right? What is your thoughts about the being a leader in AI in AI regulation in Europe, basically.
Yes, so I think Europe has a little bit this connotation nowadays that like regulation kicks in early. It can, of course, be a disadvantage, and you can see that some of the new technologies that are being built in the AI space are also by some of the leading US vendors are not coming into Europe as fast as they are available, for instance, in the US and other countries. I think like regulation in general, like it's always a double-edged sword, but I don't think you want no regulation either. Simple examples, whether it's like I think like great examples, for instance, when the EU started to regulate, hey, how do you charge your phone? And now all phones have the same charges. That's like making it more consumer friendly ultimately. So sometimes that's good. But at the same time, of course, you don't want to inhibit innovation. I think it's always something where a technology has beautiful potential. And I think that's also the case for AI. It can do tremendous things for us and really help us like solve some of the skill gap and worker gap we have in the world, and I think this will only increase. And so I think like having more technology available is probably good, but of course like every technology can also have a downside. I think like recently somebody said, hey, think about cars. Like cars are a great invention, but at the same time it's good to have a seat belt. And if nobody ever required the companies to build a seat belt, maybe it would have not been there today. So it's a very simple example of sometimes these rules are also good, but of course always in a measured way, I would say.
Do you think or do you believe that there is such a big difference between European way to approach automation compared with the Silicon Valley?
Yeah, I think even in the broader space, like startups, scale-ups, tech companies in general, I think there's usually less funding in Europe. So it's harder to start, it's harder to scale, which means like you need to be more frugal potentially. You need to be maybe even having a bigger conviction about what you're building and then really sticking with it and bringing it to profitability at some point. And at the same time, this can, yeah, build beautiful products. And I think especially now with the new rise of AI, I think we're seeing also some really cool, successful companies that start to emerge in Europe, whether it's ourselves, but also like others. Big fan of Lovable, which is a company from Sweden that now is really big on building SaaS solutions prompt-based with AI, or whether it's like some of the foundational models, even like Mistral is like one of the LLM providers out there. So I think there's really like some amazing technology companies that are starting to emerge out of Europe as well. Of course, it's sometimes harder because you don't have the same investment and funding landscape, but it makes it even more nice to see what's emerging from that.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk a little bit about stories. I love to ask stories, actually. So I would like to, if you have and if you want, for sure, do you have any make user story that they used your software and it really changed the way they do business or in a personal way?
Yeah, actually, I have one that is very recent. So just yesterday, I was in Paris and we met with our leadership team. We do a strategic meeting once a quarter. But after that, I used the chance while I was there to meet some of our customers at a tech conference. And one of the companies, they have built just very small, starting with two founders, connecting some no-code databases and WhatsApp with Make and using AI, some open AI technology in there in order to, yeah, build something that helps you with your diet, figuring out like how many calories are you eating, what's healthy for you, etc. And they had no coding experience, no background in technology, but really just this idea of, hey, we would love to be able to chat with an AI in my WhatsApp that allows me to track what I'm eating, what calories I'm consuming, and help me like keep a healthy diet. And they built this all from scratch with no coding background. And I think that's the power now with a lot of the AI technologies, with the no code technologies. And yeah, with a very visual approach like we have it at Make, that people start to get empowered to build like entire technology companies from scratch without this developer background, just by yeah, teaching themselves and really digging into the possibilities that are being unlocked right now as we speak.
So, as a CEO, I believe that you go through a lot of challenges as a leader, right? So, are these small kind of user success that makes you keep pushing, or do you have something more personal that something that drives or motivation? So, any motivation behind that?
No,
It
I
could be
think
in the
what you just
hardest.
mentioned is really something that like doesn't only drive me, but a lot of people in the company. It's when we see people like starting to use our technology, and there's often this what we call the aha moment, which is like when they really understand what's possible and they start to get creative about the solutions they can be building, and they get really excited about it. And it's this feeling of being powerful, this feeling of being able to create new solutions and putting AI to work for you, putting technology into your hands, and now being able to create new solutions, automations, and workflows that you automate. And then people send us messages. So every day we get messages from our customer base. Hey, I recently joined Make. I love the product. Thank you for building this. And often this is what keeps us going. It keeps us excited. We are sharing this internally. We have our Slack channels where you can read it. And of course, sometimes then you get also people saying, hey, you're missing this capability. I'm begging you, build this. And in a way, that also keeps you going because you really see that they have a need for what you're building and it's really valuable to them. And yeah, if you can help others this way and you help them to be empowered and like building their businesses, it's super cool to see and keeps us excited for sure.
So you've been over 4 years in Make, right? How does AI or how did AI really help the company to, yeah, that because now AI it's been for some time already, but I'm not sure like before you were there, how was it? I'm not sure if you knew how they were using AI, if they're even using AI, but now that you are here, how did AI help the company?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting. If you go back 2.5 years, a lot of the market wasn't even talking about AI. I think what then happened is there was this first launch of ChatGPT and people started to play with it, and somehow it became a mainstream discussion. And very early on, we said, hey, this has an API endpoint that you can connect into workflows. And so very early, we launched this capability to connect to the OpenAI large language models and be able to bring them into your business workflows. And this was actually the starting point for us of the journey. So very quickly, we noticed more and more people are actually leveraging that in order to build more sophisticated workflows, maybe even agentic workflows instead of deterministic automations like we used to see in our product. And then we thought, okay, if this is really like where the market is going, where our customers have a demand, we started to invest more and more into that. And over time, we focused on building out different AI integrations into our technology. And now you can connect to tens and tens of different AI products out there. You can all bring them together into your existing business workflows. But you can go even further. Nowadays, you can start to just put a prompt and say, hey, build this workflow for me, and you will get the first version of it. And then you start from there. So basically, it gets much easier also for customers to figure out how to integrate different systems, how to automate. And last but not least, you're also starting to use it internally, of course. Like, I think that's what everybody does. Every tech company nowadays reports on how much of their code is written by AI. Of course, I don't think it's using AI for the sake of AI, but where it really helps developers be more productive or just move faster or get creative about new ideas, it's super exciting. And I think the next step here will be around also leveraging it more and more in the design work that you're doing early with your UX teams, your designers, building prototypes before you even go about like building this into your product, basically.
Yeah, I also believe that AI make everyone more efficient. 100%. So, well, you're also an investor, a seed investor, actually. Do you have any story that you would like to share with us about early stage founder that you have invested, more or less? Yeah.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to investing, my expertise lies in software and software as a service, particularly. So I stayed true to that with all the investments I did so far. For me, it's always also been something of a personal story. Either I knew the founders of these companies, or somebody that I know very well recommended these people, and then we got in touch. So I think if a company is really early stage, it's not that much about the idea, but about the team that's building that. So for me, I think ultimately, if you do some seed investments in startups, it's a bet on the founders rather than on the exact product idea. It might pivot so many times, but if there is a certain grit and a certain level of agency and this will to push things forward and really build good solutions for your customers, then I think this is where it has the best shot of being successful. And so I think that's maybe the shout out to all the seed investments I did. I really believe in those founders, basically.
Yeah. So if you could give one piece of advice to a founder building in automation like you or in AI, what would it be?
So I think one advice would probably be like build something that AI is just not yet ready to do. So basically something where it's a great idea, but right now the models are not good enough to get it done for you yet. Because I think right now what actually happens is the quality of these AI models is improving really fast. And so if you have ideas around like achieving a certain output or outcome with AI, where like all your tests and MVPs are failing at the moment, but there is a good chance that like with a bit of an improved AI model in the future, it will be successful, then I think you're exactly in the right spot because you just see the quality improving so fast at the moment. Then you might have a year or two advantage or like head start on somebody who's just building it once it's actually possible.
Thanks, Fabian, for your advice. So I've got one question make my by me and another one that it's gonna be an open question for you. Move fast forward, let's from 10 years from now, right? How do you see make? What do you think that your company make will achieve for, I mean, with the help of the AI and for the humanity as well?
Yes, something that we've been discussing a lot is that the rise of quality in AI technologies will probably lead to a place where you will have some form of a hybrid workforce of AI agents and humans, and where as a human you can like collaborate with several agents that you can orchestrate or even build out yourselves, spin up, hire, or whatever you want to call it. And I think this really requires also like a new way of thinking about how do I operate in my business. And so for us, this is what we think a lot about right now. Like, how can we, take our approach, our make, let's say, let's put our make flavor to it, which is really about like, how do we like make it very intuitive, very visual for people to interact in such a setting where a company in the future might have an org chart that is not made up just by humans, but also AI agents, different automation and AI solutions, and how do you all orchestrate it? And I think that's where we see a huge potential, and this will unlock completely new opportunities also for solopreneurs, small startups that really can scale to a size that has been unseen with so few people before. So I think there's huge potential, and hopefully we can help make this work.
That's great, actually, what you are guys building. So I've got a one, as I said before, one last question, which is, I'm not gonna make that question. I want you to, if you want, obviously, if you want to share something that we didn't have talked before in this interview, or you want to give another advice, or you want to remind something that we already talk about. So it's just a free question if you want. If not, yeah, we can conclude.
No, so I think this was a fantastic conversation, and a lot of it was around AI. I think many people are hyped about it. Many still struggle to figure out how can they actually use it in the day-to-day. I would love to encourage everybody to just get started, try it out. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be working today, but really just get familiar with the technologies, spend time on learning all the different ways how to use AI in your business. Yeah. Look up what you can do and make with it as well. You will get a ton of value from combining automation and AI. I think that's where the future lies. And yeah, I'm just encouraging people to learn and stay curious.
Well, Fabian, thank you very much. It was a very actually beautiful ending, like with your advice. So the interview is just it's done. Thank you very much for making time for this. I have such a good time. I've learned a lot about Make more than because you always find things on internet, but you are the best person to talk about it. So thank you very much. I actually really like your software. Yeah, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.